Hi there, this is Dr. David Key Lindsay Berkson, and today we'll be mapping out oxytocin in this 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be speaking with Dr. Devaki Lindsay Berkson. Dr. Berkson has been in practice as a nutritionist since the mid-1970s and as an integrative nutritional, gastrointestinal, endocrine specialist since the early 1980s. Dr. Berkson specializes in complex cases, high-risk hormonal patients, and severe gastroenterologic cases with the intent of avoiding surgery where possible. Dr. Berkson consults all over the world. She works remotely as a consultant or in person at two medical clinics or in her home office. You are going to love this conversation, and you may want to rewind and listen again as Dr. Berkson is rapid fire in our discussion of the fast-firing neurohormone, oxytocin. Dr. Berkson, welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix. I'm so glad you're here.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
This is one of my favorite topics, the topic of oxytocin, because I often like to talk about empathy and how as practitioners, when we practice with empathy, we actually get our own oxytocin flowing. So in addition to the way in which we get our oxytocin flowing as practitioners, I want to dive into the impacts and the effects of oxytocin on the body. Where do you like to start this conversation, Dr. Berkson?
Well, first of all, hormones are often misunderstood, and oxytocin is completely misunderstood. It's called the love potion, the bonding hormone, and the pregnancy hormone because it is a contractile hormone.
Right.
Its signals help the uterus contract to let the baby go during pregnancy, and there's also a contraction in the breast to let down milk. So that's been its classic job description, even clinically with physicians. But if you take a look in the literature, if you go to PubMed and you go to peer-reviewed data, you'll see 60, 70 articles coming out every few months over the last few years as its job description is really enlarging. And one of the things that I think people don't understand that I've connected the dots of is that when a mother that's giving birth, when her body is flush with oxytocin, what happens is that oxytocin then flushes the baby's body with oxytocin. And we now talk about vaginal births, seeding from the mother's microbiome if she's healthy, because she could be obese and unhealthy and have an unhealthy microbiome and seed an unhealthy microbiome to her baby. But the oxytocin from the birth process literally protects the baby's crypts and gut wall lining from the shock of being born unto the first feeding. And the reason it can do this is that Swedish research on patients that were having gastrointestinal surgeries where they took strips of various portions of the GI tract, they assessed them for the messenger and RNA of oxytocin, and they were able to prove, and it's been replicated by independent laboratories, of course, that's a hallmark of science, that there are, in fact, receptors, proteins in the shape of satellite dishes. They receive the signals of a ligand or a hormone. They are all throughout the mouth, the esophagus, the small intestine, the large intestine, the liver, and the pancreas. There's none in the gallbladder. In fact, they're very active in the alpha and beta cells of the pancreas. So what they now have understood is that oxytocin is one of the hormonal caretakers of the gut. And there's lots of randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trials taking a look at what are clinical conditions that we might use it for. But in the beginning, when a mother's body is flush with it and then the baby's body is flush with it, it is protective for the gut, which is the mothership of the baby's health, and it sets and primes the gut for protection as it grows up. In fact, there's a number of studies where they make knockout mice that can't absorb a signal from oxytocin, and they don't accept that signal from their moms, and then they have more susceptibility to colitic diseases and inflammatory bowel diseases. So oxytocin has many other job descriptions besides pregnancy, lactation,
and bonding.
And bonding, right. It's incredible. So just that. Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing. I love how you are talking about it as its job description. And as you're speaking, I'm right there in the central part, what I like to call the soup of the matrix. You covered hormones and neurotransmitters. You covered mind, spirit, emotions, community in some way. You know, if we think about the community, even internally, you talked about structural integrity in the GI, of course, GI function, and even immune and inflammatory balance. Just in that job description alone, you covered all those bases. What is it that helps the mom to have enough oxytocin to transmit that to her baby?
This becomes the ultimate question of what really protects various hormonal production. In a very healthy individual, all of us throughout our lives, even into a late adulthood, are supposed to, within our central nervous system, secrete every 2 to 3 minutes oxytocin. Men are supposed to secrete it. Women are supposed to secrete it at various times, like orgasm. We secrete more, and women secrete more at orgasm than men do. So women bond more to a guy, even if he tells her they're just friends with benefits. She's going to bond because she made more oxytocin over time. But we all, if we're healthy, make it. So what are the building blocks of oxytocin? One of the things that is necessary as a set of cofactors is that oxytocin is very vitamin C dependent.
I was just going to ask you about that because I was reading an article about the connections between vitamin C and oxytocin. Beautiful. Tell us more.
Well, you need to have about a few thousand milligrams produced exogenously. You have to take it in from your diet to really help fluff up your ability to make it. In fact, there's even a double-blind human trial where they gave different amounts of vitamin C, and at 3,000 milligrams a day, that was the sweet spot. People were having, were more orgasmic and making more love, and it was acting to enhance libido, because what it did was it enhanced the endogenous secretion of oxytocin. The results are instantaneous when it's released if there are specific nutrients available locally within the tissues, zinc atoms that are present, and also based on magnesium, based on vitamin A is a little bit active in this here. So a lot of our food choices affect our facileness of hormones being able to deliver their signals, because the nutrients that we digest from our food really reside a lot in the receptor and help allow all of the structural and shape-shifting changes that need to take place for the hormone to deliver its signal. And oxytocin needs zinc just like the sex steroid hormones need zinc, but in a different way, but it still creates the optimal shape for oxytocin to nestle on in and give its signal. But the other thing is that oxytocin is very dependent on hormones. Mm-hmm. It's very dependent, for example, on estrogen. So as estrogen wanes in a woman, she has less ability to secrete oxytocin. It really kind of follows estrogen around like a puppy dog. And men get a little bit more teary and emotional as they get older. If they gain some weight and their estrogen to testosterone ratio makes it where there's too much estrogen in ratio to testosterone, they start making a little bit more, and then they start having a little bit more feminine type of emotions. And it also is important to have good thyroid function. So oxytocin depends on estrogen and thyroid function, and it's actually a little bit down regulated if there's excessive amounts of testosterone, which is a little bit why you get more aggression with testosterone. Part of that is mediated by the shutting up of oxytocin signals.
Oh, I love this. So we're over now in the story section of the matrix. You're talking about some major triggering events and mediators. So the triggering events, so to speak, for oxytocin production could be nutrient deficiencies. They could be hormone deficiencies. And then those will also act as mediators, whether we are able to produce enough or too little oxytocin. Anything else that could be a trigger for somebody not being able to produce it?
all the places where oxytocin receptors live, especially in the vagus nerve and in the prefrontal cortex, they all completely identically overlap with estrogen receptor beta receptors. They discovered that the oxytocin receptor kind of rides piggyback right on top of the ER beta receptor. They really need each other, and they have, we don't even understand totally their intimate meeting and mingling, but we know that they're very much dependent on each other all throughout the brain. Wherever ER receptors are, oxytocin receptors lie on top of them. So as oxytocin gives calm, and it's been utilized now in a lot of studies for to treat emotional pain, to treat physical pain. Then when there's no more hugging between mom and dad that are have a newborn, there's less hemorrhage after postpartum hemorrhage. It's just being looked at every which way. There's a lot of applications clinically, but we're just beginning to understand that oxytocin has a lot to do with estrogen receptor beta. I take a look a lot at estrogen receptor beta efficacy in a patient, whereas not everybody does. Some doctors, some really big docs that give hormone classes will say, well, if in hormone replacement you give a woman estradiol, she's just going to make some estriol out of that anyway, which is the main signaling hormone to ER beta. So why do you even need to give estriol? Well, I have found that it makes a very big difference, and people that need it and aren't getting the clinical efficacy that you wanted out of whatever protocol you're doing. And ER beta and estriol are very active in between cells in the gut wall to help keep your gut wall not excessively permeable or leaky.
I want to ask you a couple questions. One, which probably is on the potentially simpler side, is in the arena of what if we need to upregulate oxytocin? What tips and tricks do we have in our toolbox there?
When you give oxytocin, for example, as a nasal spray, which is how most of the research has been done, the basic dosage has been 24 international units, that's called IU, in a nasal spray, although there's a lot of research that has a broader span that goes from 8 international units all the way up to a variety of vaginal gels. That there's something called Vagitocin that comes out of Sweden that has anywhere from 400 to 600 IUs. So there's this broad scope, but it acts immediately. On the benign self-intervention level, you can put ice cold water on your face or the old time cold showers. Those are known to enhance oxytocin production. You can definitely do hugging. Every time you hug, you make a lot more oxytocin. Meditation has been known to increase. In fact, one of the main reasons that we get benefits from meditation is that it boosts the endogenous production of oxytocin. A lot of the benefits come from oxytocin. It's the middleman of your efforts to have meditation. So that's really interesting. In fact, Viagra, there's a study out of the University of Wisconsin where they were trying to figure out, besides nitric oxide, you know, how does Viagra really do this thing where if you have a 4-hour erection, you should go to the ER, you know, you see these commercials. They discovered it's because Viagra helps release oxytocin, and oxytocin works in concert with nitric oxide, which is interesting because estrogen also enhances the release of nitric oxide. So there's a lot of connect the dots of all of these hormones that are just beginning to be explored. I was at a conference in Colorado Springs just a few months ago, and there were a number of functional psychiatrists sitting at the table, and they were all talking about using troches, oxytocin troches, for bipolar disease and also as one of the other multiple tools in treating dementia patients, and they were all getting amazing results. So oxytocin can be replaced just like estrogen can be replaced, just like testosterone could be replaced, but it's very new and people don't know a lot about it. It is water soluble. It doesn't last that long when you purchase it. It's very time oriented in what you buy. So there's a lot of nuances, but oxytocin replacement is important because just like estrogen and the other hormones like testosterone, progesterone that can all be altered by hormone altering chemicals, oxytocin receptors can be damaged by hormone disruptors. For example, there's a lot of literature about bisphenol A, which we know is damaging to estrogen activity. Well, it's damaging to oxytocin activity, and pesticides can be damaging to oxytocin activity. So we're seeing more hormone altering chemicals in the toxic soup that we live in, futzing with the capability, if even you make enough oxytocin, for it to do what it longs to do, which is deliver signals to your genes to caretake all these things that we've just been talking about. In fact, there's a lot of thought that we're seeing more and more children on the Asperger spectrum, autism, behavioral issues, impulsivity control issues, even sleep apnea, younger kids. There's discussion that oxytocin receptor dysfunctionality, because of the toxic soup that we live in, and the egg and the sperm and the mom's amniotic fluid, that we're seeing more oxytocin dysfunction. And you can have polymorphisms and SNPs. You know, we can have issues with it just like you can with methylation. So oxytocin replacement is really going to be utilized more and more. And that's part of my mission, to help share the oxytocin message.
New kid on the block and a new job description. And that was rapid fire goodness. I know it's only job is not bonding, but I feel really connected to you, Dr. Bergson. That was awesome. Thank you so much for joining us and really shedding some light on an important topic.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there is a new podcast episode ready for you, just go to 15minutematrix.com/notify. Let us know your email address, and we will then pop into your inbox to let you know that a new episode is ready and waiting for you. Plus, you always have an open invitation to email us and let us know who you'd like to hear and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. Go ahead and email us at ask@15minutematrix.com.